Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Action Jackson. Jackson. I'm Tom Arnold. She's Stephanie coming back from a couple of week hiatus. Welcome back. The Tuesday was not the same without you. Just saying.
Missed you too.
Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 19. Dow up 161. NASDAQ up 69. We're attempting to make back a chunk of the disastrous Monday. For those that maybe had your head in the sand or wished you had your head in the sand, the Dow was down 602 yesterday. S&P is down 54. NASDAQ down 206. So right now we're about, I'm going to say, a third of the way back, something like that, maybe not even. The big ones that were getting clobbered were Apple. And somebody came out and said, well, gee, you know, they might be 30 million phones light. I'd say that's a little light, wouldn't you, Manny? It's a tad light.
That's a real number.
And Goldman Sachs, and we're going to try and get some more information on this when Joel and Kenny come on, because I've followed a little bit, but as usual with Goldman Sachs, this stuff is kind of dribbling in. Some story about some country that thinks they basically screwed him over, and it turns out Lloyd Blankfein was in the tape, and they said he wasn't, or something. But, again, we will talk more about that when those guys come on, and the Goldman was down like $15, so it's not trading down to 207. Well, 207.50. It's up $1.50 this morning. And I'm going to say right now that's a dead cat bounce, stuff. You know, we'll see how that lands. We have Home Depot up $6. So some stuff is kind of moving here. But yesterday is, you know, these days like yesterday are brutal. And then the dollar is up strong, so you would think even the place you can go to hide, like gold and silver and oil, not so. They were all getting hammered as well. So gold's back down to a couple of month low. So it's there was no place to go yesterday, and that's just a tough day. You just sit there and you watch. Steph, I want to talk a little bit this morning. Now, Steph is somewhat of a hybrid. I'll use that term. She now is I'd say you're more of a retail investor, but you have worked on trading floors, so you know more about both sides of the fence than probably most people. And this. When the market is doing this, I'm going to say, Steph, from my side as a money manager / broker, more money manager, and in dealing with clients, this is about as tough a time as you can get when you're dealing with people. And a lot of it is just instinctual. A lot of it is, you know, I don't know what it is, but it seems like it's. I want to talk a little bit to the listeners about a lot of the feelings that they're probably feeling. They're not alone. When you look at some of these stocks that have gotten hammered, and you look at say protection or something, I'll start out by saying I have some people this week that are very interested in getting back into our somewhat dormant Protect Index program, which we did for 11 years. In the last 8 or 9 years, it really was not the strategy you wanted. The calls and puts didn't line up, and it was hard to get in. All the market did was creep up, and interest rates were zero. So puts were high and calls were low, so it just wasn't the time for that strategy, and we didn't put a whole lot of people in it. But right now, I think it is the time. Briefly, the strategy is you buy an underlying index product, try and buy the market, buy long-term put protection and sell shorter-term calls in an effort to pay for the put protection. And I'll use the term normal markets. I think for retail people, it's about as good of a strategy as anybody's ever devised. And, not like I didn't devise it. I did. But I say there's times when it doesn't work. I mean, there's no such thing as a strategy that works like forever, but.
No, and that's one thing I think people need to realize is that, this is just like, drugs is what the word that comes to mind, but I mean, you know,
good drugs.
Yes, I meant positive drugs. You know, sometimes some things work to help an ailment for a while, and then you have to switch something up to try something new. So it's the same thing, and it's partly because the market's constantly changing. So you need to constantly reevaluate your strategy and then come up with a new strategy to handle whatever the current changes to that market are.
Well, the last 7 or 8 years, I'm going to say the only strategy anybody would go anywhere and come out with you with is, give me your money, I'll charge you 1%, put it in the market, and I'll watch it for you. Buy and hold. Whenever the market goes down, don't ever sell. It always comes back. Well, that strategy worked for a while, too. But the funny part is, Steph, you'd asked me in 1998 when we designed these protect. Matter of fact, I was at a seminar. We were giving a seminar. And somebody says to me, What are the holes in this strategy? When won't it work? And I said, well, funny you should mention that. The two things that will happen, if interest rates go to zero, and if the market just creeps up for about 7 or 8 years, because when the interest rates go to zero, it messes up the price of the calls and the puts, and all of a sudden people are not going to want to buy insurance. And somebody in the crowd goes, well, that'll never happen. Well, it did. I mean,
never say never.
Who would have thought that you'd have zero interest rates for 7 years? I mean, it's
it was unheard of in the '80s.
Oh, yeah.
Think about that, and I'm sure at some point it'll be unheard of again. But no, I mean, to your question, I think, you know, there's a very different strategy for the retail play than there is for individuals who are like working with somebody like you. So, you know, at this point, what I kind of like is, and I kind of get the strategy from my grandmother, is that when it's too good, it's just too good. And that's when I start looking to take some profits for things, and I start trying to get out of some things that I'm not confident will necessarily weather a storm, should a storm come. And I kind of usually put that money to the side or put it in a money market or something like that to hold on to for a day when the market goes down by 600 points and I want to buy into something that's declined, right?
Well, that's because the cookie jar isn't big enough yet for all your money stuff.
Yeah, right. I wish I had a bigger cookie jar. Anyway.
But now you are also describing, unbeknownst to yourself, you're also describing a somewhat active trader.
Correct.
Now, when I say that, I've not seen Steph's portfolio. It's none of my business unless she wants to show it to me someday. But
it's not very big. I'll show it to you later.
Well, but what I'm saying is you probably have a lot of stocks in there that you, quote, like or did like or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fairly actively managed is what I'm saying. So you have, I'm going to pick a number. You have 10, 15 stocks you like, maybe 20. And so when you assess it, you're going to say, all right, well, I don't think the market looks so hot here. Here's the stocks that I don't know why I put them in here in the first place, but those are the first I'm going to get rid of. You're going to selectively peel back,
right?
Is what I'm saying, which is totally different than somebody in a 401k.
Well, it is gonna, and it's not.
Well, it is. I mean, what I'm saying is generally they can't pick stocks.
No, in general, you have to pick funds, do the same thing with funds.
Well, but there's some only have 10 choices, and some of them are bonds, and some of them.
Yep. I got a lot of that, too.
Okay. So that's why I'm asking. Sorry. I know you're into this. So what I'm saying is that person is more than likely to say, God, the market looks like crap. Why don't I just move 70% of my stuff out of whatever fund this is? I've never even read the damn thing. And into cash, which is a different adjustment.
Correct.
Than you're making.
Well, yeah. I was actually just speaking about the portion of the stock portfolio that I have. But,
right.
Yes, you know, for 401ks and whether or not, you know, there are a lot of different, a lot of different strategies with them. But you're exactly right. You have limited options in a lot of cases, although a lot of different firms are opening up the 401ks to allow you to put stock trades in.
You know, I keep saying that. I don't see any flood that way.
It's not a flood. And you know what? It's not a flood is partly, I think, because people are trained not to look that way. And I'll tell you from my own experience, I've got 3 or 4 different 401ks in different places just based on time and previous jobs. And when you go into the website where you usually make your selections for your funds, it is difficult to get through the process to do stock trades. It is not obvious. It's not clear. It doesn't make any sense. And frankly, I've had a hard time doing it myself. So I understand why people aren't necessarily moving that direction.
Why, just out of curiosity, for somebody who is as bright, I'm going to recruit you on the air, somebody is as bright as you, why don't you take three or four of those things and roll them into a IRA?
So I have rolled... I've rolled a couple of them into an IRA, and there's a couple reasons why I hold on to. One is I really do not like the program that my company is currently in at all, so I've got that one separate. Two, I really like the program that I was in my previous company.
Okay, so if they got some funds you really like, then that would be the only reason to stay there.
Right, so that's part of the reason why I've got a bunch of different funds. And the other one is that the one of the funds has got such low rates in terms of the fees that I get charged on that, but it makes it a lot more sense to keep it there than it does to move it other places.
Okay, so there's reasons other than just laziness.
You got it.
Okay, well, that makes sense then. Because that was the lion's share of my business for a real long time, where people who retired and the couple would come in and say, okay, we've got this IRA or a 401k and we'll roll in an IRA. And it's... That's the lion's share of what my business is.
Yep.
But you know what? The problem is you don't see the blue collar couples wandering in with the $900,000, $1 million like you did 15 years ago.
Well, you can't. I mean, in a 401k, you can only put so much in a year. So getting to $1 million in a 401k means you probably need to start when you're like 8. And
when I say that, a lot of these companies matched.
I have maxed my 401k out since the day I started work, and I am not even close to $1 million.
But you're not near retirement either. You're not close to 65.
But I got 20 years left, and still.
I'm gonna bet that you're solidly over a million. If I'm still around, I'm gonna collect my dollar from you, Missy. You're solidly over $1 million in that thing.
When I retire?
Yeah.
Oh, by the time I retire, probably.
Like I said, yeah. Okay. You give me my dollar right now? Is that what you're gonna do?
No.
I'll wait till you're dead and toss it on your grave, Leah.
Hey, that's fine. At least someone will come visit me.
Yeah, I'm thinking the other way. I'm going to go long before you. What I'm going with this discussion is I've talked to some people, like I said, all of a sudden the phone's ringing off the hook. I've talked to some people this week, and it is very, very difficult, Steph and Maddie. If somebody says, well, Chief, I've got all this cash, what do I do with it? I said, well, if you want to get in the protected index program, I have no problem putting it in. Well, I guess we would have put it in last night or not close. I have no problem putting it in right now because I don't know when the top is. I don't know when the bottom is. Nobody knows. I said, and right now the puts and the calls line up where we're going to be buying puts for cheaper volatility, implied volatility, and we're selling the calls. It's not a bad time to get in. If we're very bearish, and we buy, whatever, let's say we're buying a spider, we can buy 25% extra puts, okay? Instead of buying 100, we'll buy 125. So that's how we became Money Manager of the Year in 2007. Stuff is I got people in on the absolute top, and the puts were so cheap, which they are now because they're already starting to go down. They were so cheap, I bought 50% more, and then when the volatility went up so much that when the market went down, we actually made a bunch of money for people, which you're not supposed
unheard
to.
Of. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just unheard of. And everybody said, well, these guys must be geniuses. Well, no, the volatility went from like 12 to 40. That wasn't genius on our part. But the point is, I have no problem putting cash in, but the issue you have is, to be honest with you, somebody like you. You walk in and you say, well, I bought Goldman Sachs at 240, and now it's 208. Now what do I do? And I'm sitting there going, uh-oh, this is a problem. It's real hard, even for me, that likes to see everybody protected, but I think, we got the greatest example going in California. I wish everybody there has fire insurance. I don't know if I'd pay the price to get it today.
Right.
There is a difference. Yeah, we'll sell you fire insurance. By the way, your house is worth $400,000. Fire insurance is $250,000.
Right.
You might say, well, I'll take my chances. But if they give you the same price as they would have 5 years ago, yes.
Right.
I'm in. But I mean, right now, I don't know if you wandered in with 1,000 shares of Goldman Sachs and said, oh, by the way, what do you think here? I'm not so sure the first thing I recommend to you is to buy some incredibly overpriced puts, which they have to be because the volatility is up like 40 in there. I mean, I don't know that I want to buy the 200 puts and pay God knows what for him right now. I mean,
yeah, I would agree with you. You know, I mean, because at this point, you're not really, I mean, if you look at history, meaning our short history in the last 7-8 years, the question is whether it's going to bounce back, or are we really in for some kind of different trend within the market? And I don't think, I mean, obviously no one knows that yet. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but looking forward, you're never quite sure. So, yeah, I think it's a hard time to make a decision on those kinds of things.
Well, I'll give you an example. This is a long time ago. I mean, this was 2000. Is we went out and we did a seminar. We knew this couple. Talk about a nice couple, but they were, you're very California couple. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy had his thing going, and she had her things going. You wonder how they were really connected, but somehow they must have on some level. And they had all this Oracle stock in the stack. This is, you know, right at 2000. The dot-com thing, and I remember, I'm going to say the stock was 60-ish or so, something like that. And I think, where did Oracle end up going down to, like 15?
I don't know, but it plummeted. I don't.
Yeah, so the guy pulls all this stuff out in his 401k, but it was all Oracle stock, you know, which was...
So he'd worked there.
Oh, yeah, he worked there. And so let's say we got into the program, and let's just pick numbers out of the air. Stock is 60. And so we bought puts and we sold calls. The stack runs down to 50.
Right.
You know, so we roll the puts down to the 50s. So the stack's down $10, and we probably made, you know, 6 back on the puts.
Right.
You know, we didn't make the whole 10 back, but we made some back. So he's down 4 instead of 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still not as good as, you know, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye, but, you know, it's still stumping in your eye. And so now the thing runs down to 50, and we buy the 50 puts, and it goes down to 40. And so, of course, we made some money on those puts. So now he's down, instead of being down 20, he's down 8. You know,
right.
So the losses are starting to pile up here a little bit. So then it gets down to 40, and he says, well, there's no way you need to hedge Oracle at 40. And, of course,
that's the problem when somebody's worked for the firm.
Well, but you just said, I'm not so sure you need to insure Goldman at 207. This is the problem you run into.
Totally.
You don't know. So all of a sudden, it goes to like 30. And then he says, well, I borrowed some money against the account, so we need to buy like the 25 puts. Okay, Armageddon puts. I'm going, oh God. So we buy those. Stock doesn't go anywhere for like 6 months. So he basically pissed away the money on the 25 puts, buying insurance. He says, well, I don't need any insurance anymore. And the stock goes to 15. You know, right after he says he swears he's never going to buy it. It was an absolute all disaster of all disasters.
Right.
You know,
you couldn't make a good decision no matter what you decide.
Rather than just saying, I need to be insured all the bit, but it's very difficult. I mean, I don't know how you would have, I would not have probably told somebody you needed to buy the 10 puts in GE.
No, I mean.
And it turns out you did.
Right. That's the problem. I mean, there's no way to predict. And, you know, that's part of playing the game, right? I mean, because that's kind of ultimately what this is part of playing the game is sometimes you make decisions that are helpful and sometimes you don't, and you make the decisions based on the information that you have at the time, and that's not usually all of the information that you would need to make 100% the right decision all the time. So, you know, I mean, that leaves you in a situation, but that's why it ends up being a game, because there's no magical formula to answer these questions.
Well, you know, but you can... I use the South Side term. You can cheat.
Okay.
Or you can use the Pullman term. You can work around it.
Yes, you can.
And you know how I do that stuff?
Mm.
For any of these people that I put in, like if somebody gave me $1 million today, and I have a feeling somebody's going to, actually. So
I wish it was me.
Well, that's all right. We'll take $950. Anyway. But, you know, this is the issue, though, Steph, in terms of... If I get 5 phone calls, it's a real process to meet somebody, understand their risk. It takes time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as much as you'd like to, you can't take 20 clients in a week.
Well, no, not because you're required to do your due diligence.
Yep.
You've got to know your client, which is a legal, technical term.
Yep.
And, you know, in order to make sure that you're making the right decisions for your clients, you kind of got to understand more than just they've got money and they give it to you.
Well, you know, if they were all the same, I could take 100. If everybody piles in with the exact same age, the exact same everything from same company, and everybody decided they want to be in the spiders, I could do 100 of them in 10 minutes. But that's not what you get. everybody's different.
Yep.
And what I'm saying is the I, you know how I cheat? I use indexes.
Mm, yeah, that's a good
because that way, no matter where it is, you always want to be insured. You maneuver the strike by picking your deductible, and you can in the same way with the calls. But to be honest, after the experience in Oracle and a couple other things where people had these stacks, I had a couple of people that rode Cisco from 60 to 6, and one didn't do anything. I mean, I honestly don't know that GE is not going out of business. I can tell you the S&P 500 is probably not going out of business. PTI will be in it before it's out of business. You know, Steph's hot dog stand will be in it before. They'll find 500 companies to be in there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the same. But I honestly don't know. If you were to ask me point blank, I have 30,000 shares of GE left, say, for instance. Do I need to buy the 8 puts? Steph, that's a question. I have no idea. I just don't want that question. I mean, the answer is I'm going to say probably no. But probably is a tough word.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I laugh. The first stock I ever bought was Intel. So I think I bought it at some ridiculous price, like $56.
Oh, that's another one of the bombs, the dot bombs.
Yeah. So I bought it at 56, and I think it's back up a little bit, but at least it's in double digits. But it went down to, I don't know, $10-15 at one point.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, the good thing is I had no money when I bought it the first time, so only owned 3 shares. But I've watched that thing just plummet. You know, it's taken almost 20 years for it to even come back to remotely. I mean, it's not even close to the price I paid for it. But
namely, the only stack in the original, in 2000,
uh-huh,
there were 5 stacks that made up 45% of the S&P. QQQ, which is exactly the same,
yeah,
as the last year, as the FANGs, made up 45% of the FANGs plus Microsoft, made up 45% of the QQQ. And everybody, a lot of people are as old as me, were putting out the danger signal. When that happens, be careful. Name me those 5 stocks, first of all, and I bet you could do this.
Oof.
And which one of the 5, only one of the 5, it's made it back to its price in 2000.
Oh, I don't know. I want to say Enron's one of them.
Nah.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be wrong, but
I mentioned about 4 of them.
Yeah, so you get
Oracle,
GE,
Cisco.
Oracle.
No. This is a QQQ. They're the tech stacks.
Yeah.
It was Oracle. It was Cisco. It was, mm-hmm, Microsoft, Intel, and I believe it was Dell. Was the other one?
Oh, that would make sense for the 2000s.
Yeah, and the only one that's back to its original price is Microsoft. And it took 12 years to do it, 13 years to do it.
Well,
and Cisco's nowhere near 65.
No. Well, that tech bubble, man, that hit us all.
Well, and Dell was taken out at what? Was it taken under at 12? He took it inside?
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, where I was somewhat going with this is you never really know on individual stacks what the bottom is. I mean, how do you... I mean, I remember Pete Najarian, who's obviously a good friend and a bright guy, saying that, you know, 2 days before 2008, when Bear Stearns went from 64 to 32, Pete's saying this is a buy. You know, and 2 days later it was toast. Well, Pete's not an idiot. Pete's a real bright guy. Now, why would Pete say something like that? Because Pete counted on the system that what he saw in Bear Stearns, there was really no reason for this thing be getting hammered like that. But the problem with that was the system was flawed, that Pete wasn't able to see the off-balance sheet companies that these guys were draining at. Now, why would Pete have known about that? It was outside the rules, outside the law. That's the whole point. He's supposed to be able to see that, and they hid it from him. So he wasn't able to make that good decision. Just like Enron. You could look at their balance sheet. You never knew that they had... What was the final number, Steph? Was it 56 off-balance sheet companies they had, or some massive number?
It was huge.
How would you or I ever know that?
Yeah, they were paying... Well, in theory, they were paying companies. They were actually leveraging money from other companies, correct?
Yeah. Well, and the people from the that were in the place. You know who was the... Oh, yeah, 2 minutes, but I'm going to... I love quizzing Steph in the morning, especially when she...
Which is a shame, because I'm not all the way awake yet. Well,
that's why I do it. That's why I love to. What was the first company to do something? Well, first of all, what was the first really major corporation? If you Google it, they don't come up as the first one, but they are really kind of the first major corporation.
First major corporation, what do you
mean? In the U.S., we're the first, like, really big corporation to set up to do a big job.
AT&T or at IBM?
I was thinking more of the Union Pacific.
Oh, yeah. That's and, before my time, so yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, before anybody's time. And the first thing they did was is they created an off-balance sheet company to actually build the railroad where they paid them more. So they bankrupted the original one, and the guys who owned the place made all the money in the second one. Because the ownership took the guys who were in charge of the Union Pacific became owners of the second one.
Yep, so they transferred basically wealth from one to the other.
Which is exactly what they did in Enron. With Skilling and those guys, they put all the trades in other corporations, so they actually drained Enron a little bit and put them in their own spots. I mean, there's nothing new here.
No, for sure, there's nothing new. It's just about getting away with it in this day and age.
Although we've had a couple of people on the show that are very upset that allegedly I don't know. I mean, you can't invent another fetish. It's already been invented before, Steph. What do you think of that?
Frankly, I'm really happy that I'm not aware of all of the fetishes out there, so I really could not comment on whether there are other ones available or not. I think fetishes are kind of a little weird to begin with.
Well, what if you think you invented one and found out somebody else already had it? Then you'd be all pissed off. Just saying.
You know? Hey, you know, I hear you.
Actually, well, whatever. We have Joel there for the break. Let's talk about the market. S&P futures down. Wait a minute. They're not down. S&P futures are up 19. We'll be right back. Mr. Joel Cannon.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Stephanie Koenig. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We'll have Mr. Joel and Ken in a second. S&P futures up 19. Dow futures up 160. NASDAQ futures up 61. We're trying to make back some of yesterday's losses. But helping out is Home Depot. I've got Home Depot is up 507. It was up 6. They came out with good earnings. Doesn't surprise me. I shop there. All their prices are up. So I'm just, I don't know if that's being critical, cynical, or I'm happy for Home Depot. And if I had some, I'd be very happy. Oil down 114, 58.79. Ouch on the oil. We got, this is the strangest thing. Oil and heating oil are going down, and your natural gas is going to the moon. Of course, it's freezing out. That's probably where that is. Over in Europe, we've got a bounce back here as well. DAX up 112. That's a full 1%. FTSE up 19.2%. Not much going on there. CAC around up 31.6. So the DAX, which was down the most yesterday, has bounced back the most. We'll figure. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 459. That's 2%. 21,816, way under 22,000. I don't know if we've seen him this low in a while. Joel will know when he comes on. We'll ask him. Shanghai, we're up 24.9%. Hang Seng up 159.6. Like I said, oil. This is bizarre. Down 114. Brent down 117. So the spread is now $10.16. Natural gas. Check this out, Steph. Where would you guess? Up 22 cents, 401, which is, it was 271. I keep saying this like 8 weeks ago. RBOB, however, down 160, so you can fill up the jalopy, and heating oil, down 2 cents as well, 213.
It's an interesting mixture.
Yeah, it is. It sure is. Of course, we don't live in the Northeast where we use heating oil, so we're here. Silver unchanged, gold down another 410. Under 1200 bucks, my gold stuff, it's supposed to be going up with the world in carnage. It is not. So we're not sure why exactly that's happening. Matty with Air Force Traffic, Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways as all of the people fortunate enough to have Veterans Day off return to work today. We do have a crash on I-80 eastbound just before I-57 blocking the left lane, and that's causing some stop-and-go traffic as folks navigate around that crash or try to get onto I-57 from 80, so keep that in mind on the south side. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57 itself, or the Bishop 4. Traffic volumes building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, same with the Kennedy and Edens, but no accidents or issues to report. Only other crash in the area is near the North Shore, Route 41 southbound at Kennedy Road, which is Route 60 in Lake Forest. We have a crash right on the southbound side that's causing delays. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, partly cloudy skies, cold temperatures, as we've been for the better part of a week now. We're 20 degrees below normal, a high of just 30 with wind chills in the single digits. Right now it's mostly clear and 20 going up to a high of a miserable 30 degrees for November 13th. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68 today. Right now it's clear and 49. In sports, the Bulls had a couple of doses of bad news last night. One, they lost at home 103-98 to the Dallas Mavericks. Bulls were down big early, rallied back and cut it to four late, but fell short. And it was also announced that star forward Lauri Markkanen, who has not played yet this season, will miss an additional 2 to 4 weeks as his elbow injury is taking longer than they originally thought, which is not good, as he's probably, besides Zach LaVine, the only reason to watch this team right now. No Markkanen for at least 2 to 4 more weeks as he continues to recover from that elbow.
Benny, pretty happy you don't have those tickets anymore?
Yes. Suns were blown out by OKC 118-101. In hockey, Blackhawks lost their 8th straight, but they did at least get a point last night. They made it to overtime, but lost in OT at Carolina 3-2. And Monday Night Football, it was the Giants over the 49ers 27-23. Chief.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well on this, this Tuesday morning. How you guys doing?
Doing fine. I just was, I see this headline here in, without even being like mayor or governor, you know, and Maddie's known me forever, and Steph for a while. I've kind of very little Irish temper, but once in a while, I have one. I mean, it's you have to really dig to get to it. I see this headline here: Amazon picks New York City and Northern Virginia for additional headquarters. Wall Street Journal. Let's say, for instance, something really weird happened, Joel and Steph, and that somebody made me mayor or governor. I don't know why anybody would ever want to do that, but say they did.
Oh, you get a new title, you'd move away from chief to gov.
okay. And I know one of the things that's bothered my state is the fact that people are buying all their retail stuff from this place called Amazon and not paying me state taxes. And it's pissing me off to the nth degree because I could use the money for pensions and God knows what else. And all of a sudden, I won't say this little weasel, but this guy walks in my office and says, we want all the handouts to build a headquarters here. Do you think I tag him or what? Or do I be nice to him? How would you have the nerve to do that? And then we set out the absolute welcome mat for this guy. We're going to give him whole neighborhoods, and he's not going to, his people don't have to pay state tax if they're here. The company will get the, how can you possibly do that, knowing that the guy's whole bit, without even asking the question, well, at least now are you going to pay sales tax? And the answer is still no. It's no for anybody that's a third party. How do you even have that conversation without having to be restrained?
Well, there was a lot of competition for it. A lot of the cities, including Detroit, you know, really rolled out the red carpet. Some are even saying that they took an advantage of the situation a little bit. And I've also read some other articles where it doesn't look like, you know, Amazon, the big behemoth company, the culture and everything. And now they're going to be split for, you know, through 3 different campuses. And I don't know. That some people are looking at that as a negative for the company. It's come off since its last earnings report, you know, starting to rebound, but you have to think that, you know, the scent is off the flower in this one a little bit. You know, holding up along with the rest of the market, but got over 2,000, and that was just a little bit too much. And whether it's a healthy pullback or a change in trend, that remains to be seen.
I thought it was interesting they were going to move to Queens in New York. I mean, that's an interesting play.
But they were going to give them half of Queens.
That part I got.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I think actually, Steph, my geography isn't the best, so you probably know, but weren't they getting some huge campus right where all the trains come together?
From what I've seen online, because, I also used to live there, but it looks like it's kind of in a right where a bunch of trains come together for sure. It's a very hard place to drive to if you're looking to drive, which is not necessarily what you do in Manhattan anyway, or even Queens. But it just is an interesting cultural move because you kind of have the Manhattan attitude, but yet you're kind of off from Manhattan. So I just thought it was a very interesting place to be.
Well, I thought the Washington one was a layup. Because there's no way, when you start having problems with antitrust and things like that, you can't be 2,500 miles away. You've got to be close.
In fact, I have it on recording. A year ago, you said New York and D.C., book it.
Wow.
And he said Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, at no shot.
Well, because you wanted to be, I confess, unlike some, I did read that somewhere. It said no way on earth. You're going to be in Washington because you're going to have to start. It's like when Microsoft had all the issues. You guys remember
antitrust,
when? Yeah. When all of a sudden they said these guys don't have enough lobbyists, they don't have another thing, they don't know how to run a company, and you know they don't know how to work the system. And sure enough, then they put some huge office, not a big office in Washington, but didn't they get a big presence there, Joel? I think they did, of some kind. You know, at least enough to maneuver lobbyists around. You can't not be there if you're a big company now.
You can't.
Yeah, so Joel, two things I need to talk to you about big time. One is yesterday, and one is, what exactly is going on with Goldman Sachs?
Well, yesterday was just kind of, you kind of had the perfect storm. You know, you had the holiday markets, right? And then you had, you know, the Apple supplier news, LITE, you know, so that got Apple and, you know, the related components on the skids. And then I think there's some nervousness about, you know, the fires, and you saw what they did to good old Safe Utility PCG. So that and holiday markets, I think sellers just got things rolling off the open, and the buyers weren't there to step up. We're getting a nice rebound. Goldman Sachs here, I mean, it had its biggest drop in 7 years as Malaysia seeks refunds on a doomed deal here. This is going back to 2011, so I don't know. Everyone likes to pick on Goldman Sachs, and you know they run a clean ship over there. Since the financial crisis and everything, so I'm gonna have to wait. That I mean, I don't have all the details on this. They really took it to the woodshed yesterday, and is rebounding a little bit today. But someone had the memo on that one on Friday because it got whacked on Friday, and then got whacked again on yesterday. I think it's important for this to hold the $200 level because there's a lot of air between 180 and 200. That was after the election 2016 and had a big run up here, but just not enough information here to just come out and say, and what's $600 million to Goldman Sachs? I mean, come on. If they have to pay $600 million in fees, I mean, you know, that's a one-time write-off. That company makes a lot of money. I got to have to get more information on it.
Just a quick question. 30 seconds is, every country, not every country, but most countries that you see have problems, the Italian bond issue, somebody else down there with the Cyprus bond issue, Goldman's always been involved. They're always part of the deal, and they've never really had to come up with a nickel. What do you think if this happens? Does everybody else start salivating, or no? Is it a one-to-one?
I mean, sure, if it gets the ball rolling, you know, and the other countries or other entities do it, but you know, the market likes to take news, take information, and just push it to the extreme. And you know, if this comes out where they're exonerated, I mean, you could have a big rebound in it. But if there's smoke, there's fire, and we'll just have to wait this out. It's tough for Goldman Sachs shareholders for sure, though, to see that 25-point drop over the last two sessions.
Well, the options of this week versus next week are a 14-point implied volatility difference. It's amazing. Everything, you know, this week is hot. If you want to buy puts this week, you're paying.
You know, yep. All right. Oil down for the 12th day in a row, Chief. Natty gas going the other way. And, you know, trends in commodities are hard to reverse here. So we'll see if oil can find a bottom here back under $60. That's not helping the oil stocks, which is a big component of the index.
I got guys coming today to put a big tank in. We're getting rid of the natural gas. We're going with the heating oil.
Yep.
Take care, buddy.
All right, maybe we'll talk sports on Friday.
Yes, too. SP Futures up 16, Dow Futures up 139. Come back, Mr. Kenny Pulcherry.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're headed down to Uvalde, El Paso. I swear they ran into a great big castle. Billy Joe shot a man while robbing his castle. Bobby Sue took the money in a...
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Stephanie Coney, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 16 now. Dow futures up 140. Nasdaq futures up 54. So we're still up, but we're not at our high. Home Depot, I still have them up. Actually, I've got Home Depot up only 282. They were up 650 after the number came out. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. I understand you had a couple thousand puts yesterday. You sold them on a close. You bought calls. Is that true?
It was some day yesterday, huh?
Yeah.
Although, you know, I have to tell you, it wasn't nearly as ugly, I think, as it appears by the numbers. You know, we keep talking about this just because of the way the technology works and the speed and conciseness of it. It just, you know, it was an ugly day for sure in terms of stock prices. But, you know, no one should have the sense that, you know, people were jumping out the windows, because it wasn't the way it was at all.
No, I mean, I saw some areas where it was kind of hard to do some options, but not, we were down 2%.
Yeah, but you know what happens, and we talk about this all the time. The minute it kicks in, the technology kicks in, and the algos kick in, it prices collapse, and it's difficult, you know, still because they just go in one way, right? Just one way. They just go down, down, down. And, you know, and then they ended up closing them on the lows last night. Why anybody should be surprised today that we're seeing this 20-point bounce on the S&P, you know, would almost be laughable. I mean, what would you expect to happen after we're down 60 points on the S&P yesterday in a straight line, right?
Well, it almost is our technical guy David who comes on and says sometimes it's worse when you do this in the morning rather than have it you know, kind of flush out and come back mid-morning. You know, they have the rally that maybe doesn't hold.
Right.
I don't know, Kenny. I was mentioning it earlier, we should have been in the first half hour as well, because we're talking about how for retail traders, it's real hard in here. Your stock, you bought it at 100, now it's trading 90. You don't know if you still like it or not like it. You don't really want to buy the 85 puts. You're sure as hell not going to sell the 95 calls, because then you're going to get it taken away from you before you get it back to break even.
Right.
You probably, you know, maybe you could do a repair strategy, but that doesn't give you any risk, you know, it doesn't help you risk-wise. I mean, it's a struggle if you're not, you know.
It is a struggle, but I think for the most part, especially for the retail investor, you got to just kind of ride this out. You know, I keep talking about it. I put it again in my note today. You know, you could have picked your poison yesterday. There was so many negative headlines that hit the tape yesterday. Whether it was Goldman, whether it was Apple, whether it was a speculation about Apple, whether it was the Mideast and the Palestinians and Israel, the bombs going off, whether it was Donald Trump tweeting about, you know, the Democrats and presidential harassment. I mean, any one of those headlines, all negative. On a day when the tone is negative, certainly doesn't help the situation, right? But for Donald Trump to say, you know, the market's selling off because the Democrats are going to harass me, it's almost laughable, you know,
what do you mean, almost?
Tweets are saying, I got news here, Donald. If the tone is positive today, look, we're up 20 points on the S&P, the Democrats are still going to harass you, what happened to that, right? I mean, the market's going to, they're going to buy the market today just because it's off a bounce, right? And so it's all about the broken internals as far as I'm concerned, what happened in October, the speed and swiftness in which we broke down through all those technical levels. And remember, the algos are written in a mathematical language, right? So they respond to math. They don't respond to Donald's tweets. They don't respond to bombs going off in the Mideast. They respond to mathematical breaks in mathematical formulas. And so that only adds to all that negative noise just adds to the pressure, but it certainly doesn't, in my mind, is not the cause of the pressure. The cause continues to be rising interest rates, Fed policy, ECB, I mean, a slowing global economy. Are we at peak earnings season? Those are much more macro issues that would drive the fundamentals of the market.
Wait a minute. Here's a tweet. Market rallies as Kenny Pulcheri says, don't believe yesterday's tweet.
No, but also on the days when there are holidays, I mean, you know, the amount of people in the market are a lot less, too. So your depth of market is, the market's naturally going to fly around a bit more.
They're going to fly around. And yesterday, you know, but the bond market's closed. The banks are closing. So therefore, lots of people are out. So therefore, you know, they're exaggerated. Today, they're all going to come back because now, look, after what happened yesterday, stocks are on sale again yesterday. So when everyone comes back to the desk, say, oh, my God, the trader types will jump in and have a field day today.
Exactly.
And okay, that's fine because that's what they do, but you know, so that's what you should expect this bounce is going to be today, that it's going to be much more people who weren't here yesterday going, wow, look at this, I can buy, you know, Goldman down 6%, or I can buy Apple down 8%, whatever it was off yesterday, you know what I mean? And that's fine, those are legitimate buys, actually, because Apple down 6 or 7% on, you know, on this continuing story, in my mind, is just ridiculous, right?
Well, Kenny, we were talking to David yesterday, and he's our technical guy, but this reminds me a little bit in a very small way, is you've got this the regular market movement. I'm going to say that you guys that like the charts and so forth, you pick up dramatically better than I can because I've never been good at charts. But you also have this revaluation kind of going on as well, and yep. You've got some bad news percolating in the background. And
right,
I'd say the one man's opinion, despite whether you like him, don't like him, or whatever, most people, I think, have come to somewhat of the conclusion that the White House is currently put together is no longer a real positive for the market. I mean, most people felt...
Well, I agree with you, and I think that comes down to some of the fundamental factors that are going to affect, you know, the broader market, right? So what is going to happen in policy coming out of D.C.? What's going to happen to the White House? Or what's going to happen now in Congress? Is it going to be gridlock? Is gridlock good for the market? Is gridlock bad for the market? Are the Democrats really going to get up and start to impeach and create, you know, all these other investigations, which will create a lot of noise, won't in the long-term value stocks, but they will in the short-term cause angst and anxiety. So, yeah, I would agree with you that... And those issues are all, I mean, I get it, they're all legitimate, but in terms of fundamental valuation, they don't necessarily, the noise doesn't, but certainly policy will affect long-term fundamental valuations, and that's what you have to pay attention to. I think those are the things that you should be paying attention to versus
I don't disagree. I just, sometimes when, you know, I do the thing sometime on the upside, Kenny, and it's a flaw in my thinking that if a stock is trading 60, and all of a sudden, 2 days later, it's trading 90. I say, God, were all the people who were sellers at 60, were they that big idiots? You know, and the answer, maybe, yeah. maybe it should be 90, but when you look at an Apple, wherever it was, say it was a 200, and now it's at 193. And somebody says, well, 30 million phones less, and oh, by the way, interest rates are going to be 4% instead of 2. I'm not so sure the 200 number was ever really legitimate. I mean, should it have been 180 or 160? I mean, it's hard after the last few years to really put your finger on this thing and say, this is the number. I mean, it's not like, you know, Amazon's making $40 a year where you can price the damn thing. I mean, they aren't.
Right. But, you know, listen, part of the problem is, too, certainly in a lot of these growth names, and we've seen it in the tech sector, is that trader types and risk management software, however you want to call it, investors, whatever, you know, they took some of these names to levels that were not sustainable in the environment that we're in, which is a rising rate environment, maybe a slowing environment. And all of a sudden now when the market reprices, when tech comes under pressure and people bring the cash, it's also, don't forget, it's the end of the year, so there's a lot going on. There's people are harvesting gains. Yep. People are doing tax loss selling. There's some reallocation of assets. So some of that stuff you can't explain away as fundamental. It's part of planning, right?
Right.
And so as you go into the end of the year, you're going to have a lot of that noise as well. But one way or the other, some of these names had gotten taken to levels that were unsustainable. So when they correct, everyone sits there and scratch your head and say, well, how could it have been worth $220 if it's only worth $190? Say, well, maybe because, you know, there's a little bit of euphoria in that number.
Yeah, maybe,
right?
Maybe it just never was. It just
right.
Got
maybe
there.
It never was.
And I mean, this is a tough time, Kenny. I that's why I think it's a great time to be invested if you're hedged and protected, because guess what? All the movement really helps you then. All you're doing is scalping away.
Right, correct.
In a, well, Kenny, take care of yourself, buddy. I'm going to listen to you now.
See you next week.
All right, buddy. S&P futures down, up 17. Dow futures up 141. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tomashi. Stephanie Coney, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 15, Dow Futures up 125, NASDAQ Futures up 49. These Tuesdays are a lot nicer with Steph back, don't you think, man?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
We'll talk a little bit. The market is trying its bounce back here. Oil, though, down at $1.15. 10-year yield 3.17. So the returns, I mean, the 10-year yield has not gone really back down with the market sell-off yesterday. I think Kenny's right, Steph. We're getting somewhat of a bounce today, but, I mean, we're not even close to 600. We're up 125. I mean, we're not even sniffing at a break-even here, at least not yet. A lot of crazy stuff going, but
I think it'll take 2 days. It's my prediction.
I want to give one question, and we talked a little bit about the 100 years since the World War One. Of course, I got to ask first, are you... What camp are you in? If there was a World War One, World War Two, or there was one war with a 20 years off?
Well, hey, I mean, I'm not going to rewrite history. So, to me, there's World War One, World War Two.
Some people are trying to, by the way.
No, I mean, I understand it. But, hey, 20 years of not fighting consistently, I think you got to take that as a W.
I suppose that's true. By the way, I'm gonna while you're speaking, I'm gonna dig up an email that I got yesterday from someone. And we didn't really celebrate it much here.
We didn't.
Although at some point,
the Europeans really did, though. I mean, they lost roughly 6 million over the World War One.
Yeah, it was a big, huge number.
Huge number, which was a third of the population or something ridiculous like that.
And most of them went in about 500 yards of each other in trenches.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, you go over to Europe and pretty much every family has a relative that they lost in World War One. So it was a big deal. And, you know, I think it's good to remember big events like that because I think it deters people from trying to start similar things these days. And unfortunately, I was disappointed that here we didn't make a bigger deal of it. I know we didn't get into the war until, you know, the last couple of years, so it was not such a big effect on this country. But we still had, how many million did we have over there? We had
near the end, we had quite a few.
Yeah.
And we took some casualties. Here's one of our listeners was nice enough to send me the Tribune front page of the day the armistice was signed.
Wow.
Last week I was mentioning, because everybody knows I'm kind of a World War II buff, but I also I'm very concerned. Well, I guess concerned is the right word. From what happened in Germany in 1933 and what's happening around the world now in terms of everybody jumping into this right-wing stuff. But the Treaty of Versailles, for those that don't know, was probably the litmus test of how not to do a treaty.
Yes.
And when you talk about the things Hitler knocked off basically one after another when he challenged the rest of the world on this particular treaty, you know, Steph, I mean, I might be off on my number. Something between 85 and 95% of all the world known oil reserves ended up on the Allies' side of that table.
That doesn't surprise me if you look at where we are now.
And you know who was a young but very influential economist at the Treaty of Versailles?
Who?
Keynes.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was. So here's the outline of the terms, and run these again against what essentially Hitler knocked off one by one in their 30s. Immediate retirement of the German military forces from France, Belgium, and Alsace-Lorraine. Well, of course, you figure that. Disarming and demobilizing of the German armies. Okay. Occupation by the Allied and American forces of such strategic points in Germany as will make impossible renewal of hostilities. How'd that work out? Delivery of part of the German high seas fleet and a certain number of submarines to the Allied and American naval forces. In other words, give us your navy. Disarmament of all other German warships under supervision of the Allied and American navies, which will guard them. Okay. Occupation of the principal German naval bases by sea forces of the victorious nations. Release of Allied American soldiers, sailors, civilians held prisoner, blah, 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 without such reciprocal actions by the associated governments. In other words, they didn't have to give the Germans their prisoners back right away. So I'm going to say those terms were a little, you know.
Hey, that's like, you know, it's beating someone up and then kicking them while they're down.
Yeah, and the other part that we didn't go into here, and this is how this, when you talk about money stuff, it's always... it almost turns into a circle something. I don't want to say something gross, but the Germans were forced to pay reparations to France and Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they didn't have any money, right, which has caused them to inflate their currency. You want dollars? I'll give you dollars. Turn on the press. You know?
Right.
So, I mean, that's how this starts. That's how our inflation started in the 70s when we went off the gold standard. We turned on the printing press and said we're going to pay for the Vietnam War. You want dollars? Here's dollars, right? Kind of what we did 7 years ago. We'll see how that all plays out. Starting to play out maybe right now, but not as bad as maybe I thought it would. Okay, so now we are demanding our World War One debt from Britain and France.
Right.
So now there's money going from Germany that they don't have to Britain and France, and now with the money that they just get, they're shipping it to us, or some of it. Now, in the meantime, we're allowing our geniuses are allowing Germans to come over here in the 20s. This is J. Edgar Hoover and his gang. And actually, with CUSIP numbers, are selling German bonds, allegedly gold-backed bonds in the U.S., here, to American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So the money's coming out of the U.S., which allegedly gold-backed bonds, going to Germany, going from Germany back to Britain to our government.
Yep.
How's that for a circle, Matty? I mean, what if you wrote that in a fiction book, I guarantee you got one seller, your mother, or your one buyer, your mother bought the book. I mean, who would buy that book? You couldn't think of something like that. And yet, now all of a sudden, those bonds are still out there. None of those people have ever gotten their money back. First thing Hitler did was say, those bonds, we're not paying that dough back.
Right.
And to this day, nobody here has gotten any of those bonds redeemed. Now, these are supposedly gold-backed bonds from companies that still exist that were allegedly had the collateral put up in banks that store there. You can't get your money back.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had a whole financial collapse after, so...
Well, I mean, it's like the Mexican bonds from Santa Ana. Well, Santa Ana was. I wasn't in charge back then. I mean, imagine if we did that. What, a 30-year bond? Oh, holy bleep. Who was president 30 years ago? Clinton or where were we 30 years ago? 88 would have been...
a little later.
Yeah, who was 88? I've got to remember. Reagan? Bush won.
Bush
won. So, yeah, I don't, I'm not. Bush 1 isn't still president. I'm not paying you. Imagine if we did that here.
Well, it'll definitely change our credit rating.
Yeah. Just a hair. It's astounding to me, just the population-wise, the numbers you brought out. How the hell could the Germans could lose all those people from 16 to 18 and somehow 20 years later have enough people to fight another war? They had another 3 million young men invaded Russia 22 years later. It's great work by the reproductive organs in Germany.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the point is when you push people into the ground and they've got nothing, then there's only a couple of things to do. And one of the good things the Germans do to this day is they're very organized, they're very structured, and when they want something, they put their mind to it and they solve a problem.
Yeah, well, that is the truth. And but, I mean, I think if you'd have made these terms more normal, because if you want to learn about World War II, you really have to start studying really in where? 1900?
Yeah. back to before, just before Industrial Revolution.
Well, the I think I might still have it somewhere. It somehow evaded the flood in my parents' basement. The Fall of the Dynasties, where you go from country to country, and every one of these places had this. What do you call it? Where king's in charge. It's a
monarchy,
or some sort of dynasty. Well, the Ottoman Empire wasn't a monarchy, was it? But they were just as corrupt.
So no, but they'd been there a long time, so it's the same general concept.
Same sort of deal. A few people in charge of the many. And you know, the Russians had their group, the Austrians had their group, the Germans had their group. And to a certain extent...
Yeah, but they were all related.
They were sort of all related, but they also had... Well, read this, not here, read this the Middle East. Huge arms race.
Yep.
Massive amounts of, you know...
Lack of distribution?
The population increases.
Uh-huh.
And you have people saying, where's mine?
Mm-hmm.
And does it sound like the Middle East? And some, if you read some of the interesting stuff, I don't know, I got hooked on a thing about handguns the other day. I'm not a handgun aficionado, but the history of it is spectacular. And what Colt used to do, whenever you see like some like gazillion dollars pair of custom-made Colt six shooters that were made for somebody.
Yep.
They're inevitably made. Maddie, if you see the artwork on the handles and stuff on these things, they were inevitably made for Prince Weber over in Russia somewhere. And then he would use that to buy... You brought like two regular guns and you gave these as a gift. And Matt Weber would turn around and buy, you know, 40,000 handguns from Colt. And Smith and Wesson outfitted like the entire Russian army in handguns. At one point.
Congratulations on your princehood, Weber.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What do you got to do to be a prince? You got to take a test for that?
I think you just have to be born into it.
Oh, all right. Well, that's, you know, lucky sperm club. It's not a bad thing.
It's like most things in life.
Yeah. So, everybody couldn't wait to arm all these people. And so everybody's armed. Everybody's got population pressures. And then they've got a bunch of losers running around court in every one of these places. Half of them were drugged up or drunk. I mean, guess what? Stuff happens. I mean, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Well, especially when you got a gun that's pretty easy and everyone doesn't have to see it.
Right? Yeah. Well, and I mean, when you think of the thing, the guy who got assassinated, could anybody be bumble bleeps more than those assassins?
Which assassins are you talking about?
Ferdinand.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Manny, the story there is they're going to assassinate the guy in the car, right? Well, they weren't ready. The car comes by, and they missed their opportunity.
Yeah.
So the guy goes, gives a speech or something. He comes back down the same block. They get him on the way back.
Well, it definitely was a different time.
Yeah. Imagine being that bad of an assassin and being successful.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got
that wouldn't have worked in The Godfather.
No.
But you got to look even at our Revolutionary War. I mean, handguns were notoriously inaccurate. So
oh, sure.
It was a whole different thing.
That's just why you use the wire around the neck from behind in the back seat of the car or the plastic bag over the head.
Yes.
Yes. Well, did we have plastic back then?
Did we have plastic?
Maybe not back then.
I'm not so sure they had much plastic during the Godfather era in the 20s. That's kind of a recent phenomenon, maybe.
Yeah.
But you're right. You did upgrade how the Godfather would be done today. There'd be a lot more plastic bags.
What do you think the accuracy, you mentioned handguns, I think the accuracy was of a muzzle loader?
Well, minimal. When did rifling come into play? That was until the middle of the Revolutionary War, right?
No. I'm going to say that I don't think there was rifling in the Civil War.
You're right. There wasn't. You're right.
Maybe you know what we're talking about. You know what rifling is?
Do I know what a rifle is?
Rifling.
Rifling?
Yeah. Yes.
What's the difference?
Well, a musket, you put the gunpowder and you put the ball in there, and it just blows out the...
It's a straight cylinder that blows it out.
It just blows it out, and it goes wherever it wants to go. Well, when a bullet, the inside of the rifle barrel has a spin to it. It's called rifle. It has a thread to it, very slightly. So when a bullet comes out, it's actually spinning, so it'll stay straight. Wherever a musket ball just goes out. That's why they're very effective if you shoot like a crowd of about 100 people, because it'll hit somebody.
Yeah.
But it's not going to hit the person you're shooting at. So when you say rifling, that's why when you look at those, even like a battleship gun, the metallurgy, those things are rifled. When that thing comes out of there, it's spinning like no tomorrow. And that's why it goes 20 miles. If it came out like a golf ball without dimples, then it'd just go about 50 yards and drop.
Yeah, they sort of look like a screw, but it's on the inside.
And it's an amazing, it took forever to be able to do that. I mean,
the technology to machine them accurately was just incredible.
Maybe you want to Google that. I'm going to say 1885.
You think so?
Yeah.
Anyway, that improved the accuracy of weapons tremendously.
Yep.
And before that, to your point, you just pretty much shot into a crowd and you'd hit someone. But if you were doing if we had a one-on-one challenge, my chance of hitting you was probably pretty slim.
Yeah, I mean, pistols at 20 paces was a real deal.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like using a Colt pacemaker where you can shoot the guy where you wanted to shoot the guy. I mean, it was like you shot in the general direction hoping to hit him.
Yeah, and most of the time they came away and survived because neither of them got hit.
Right.
Well, rifling was invented in Augsburg, Germany in 1498. But it didn't become commonly used until the 19th century, which I'll get the exact year.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking your regular guy in the blue and gray did not have rifling in that musket.
No.
I don't think.
No.
It says in the 1850s and 1860s, new weapons produced with rifled barrels continued to be referred to as rifled muskets or rifle muskets, even though they had not originally been produced as smoothbore weapons.
Interesting.
So, yeah, the rifled musket was used in the 1850s and 1860s that had that technology.
But they still didn't have a bullet. You had a lead ball.
Yeah.
So it was those things. If you ever go to, not to be gross, if you ever go to Gettysburg, when you use those lead balls, you'll see the entry wound of somebody. And it looks like, you know, a regular bullet hole, Matty. The exit wound looks like a hockey puck came out because the things would flatten out when they hit. The body.
They were also soft.
Yeah, they were soft. They'd flatten out. And it was just totally gross. I mean, I can't imagine being a doctor in the Civil War. I mean,
they cut off so many limbs.
Yeah.
I mean, you just couldn't save it. The amount of damage was just a mess.
All right, so Steph, back to the market. What, when you see a bundler, obviously today you'd probably rather be, well, I was going to say, I mean, if you just flipped a coin and you see a move like yesterday, you'd rather be a buy or an apple. Yet now it's down another buck and a half. Goldman Sachs down another buck and a half. So, my buddy Dr. J used to say that the difference between being an index trader and an individual stock trader, and, you know, Jan's pretty bright. He said there are no one day events in equities.
Okay.
Every event's a one day event in the indexes. He traded IBM and I traded the OEX, and he would say we'd go out, you know, for dinner after a big day, and he'd go, you know, IBM got spanked today, and I'm still short tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, it'll go down further. Yet, if the market was down that day, he'd say to me, I hope you covered.
Right.
You know, because the information seems to get out and quicker and the market does what it wants to do with the overall market. You know,
but isn't just a transfer of funds? So, like, if one's down, people are moving money into something else. And so that's where your indexes sort of balance that out because you're working across multiples versus, you know, just let's use IBM as an example. IBM's down today. You know, somebody's got to take that money that they pulled out and put it somewhere else.
Yeah, except that for every money you took out, somebody put in.
That's true. But that's exactly my point, is that it balances out over the overall index versus this particular stock.
Why do you think people, well, they don't really experience we do, being on trading floors and so forth and actually having to balance accounts. Why do you think people say, I won't say stupid stuff, say stuff like money's flowing out of stocks and into bonds? When, like if the market actually has money in it, when it doesn't. Individual people. I mean,
right.
I mean, why do you think people say stuff like that? It just becomes part of the speak, and they don't even realize what they're saying. Or
I think it's part of the vernacular, and it does provide a good visual, even if it's inaccurate.
Well, I mean, I guess what's hard for most people to understand is you could sit there and say, "I'm selling my XYZ, and I'm buying a bond."
Right.
So the inclination is, well, if 20 million people did that, money is, in essence, flowing out of one and the other. And it's not altogether wrong in the sense that you're going to drive the price down because if 20 million people are selling XYZ.
But someone's got to buy it.
Well, right, but they're buying it at cheaper and cheaper prices, probably.
Right.
So if the edge is, it's like if you see all kinds of calls trade, all right, doesn't really do you much good. But if you find out that every single call is traded on the offer, and every time the offer gets lifted, people are still buying on the offer. It gives you an idea that those people that are buying are fairly aggressively buying. Now, maybe they have a reason, maybe they don't. But it's not a neutral trade. You know what I'm
right.
saying? It's not, you know, for instance, if we do a protected index program trade, for instance, and say, you know, Daddy Warbucks comes in and says, you know, here's $40 million. Well, that'd be a nice account to have. It hasn't happened in a while. And if I were to say, okay, Steph, this is your account. We're going to go buy the Spiders. We'll pick a number. We're going to buy 5,000 shares of Spiders, and we're going to buy these puts. Where are we? We're in November. Say next July. We're going to go out on these puts. We're not going to leg that spread for you. I'm not going to buy the stock and,
right.
hope the puts are still there. I mean, we're not that stupid.
Right.
Although, I guarantee you, 90% of the people who do that trade for you are that stupid. I mean, they'll put in one and not the other.
Yeah, I agree.
So we're going to put that spread. We're going to say we want to buy the stock at 92.5. We want to buy these puts at 4.5 for a net of $88.
Mm-hmm.
For a net of $97. Okay, because we're not going to try and chase this and get you in at 102 because we couldn't get the puts.
Right.
So that trade goes to the floor. So say 1,000 of them trade. Okay, which is more than the number I mentioned, but 1,000 of them trade. There's no information on that trade. Even though we bought puts, we bought them at a price. We're not being bearish. We're actually being bullish. Because the whole trade, we're buying a stock that's 100 delta and we're buying the puts that are 50 delta. So we're 50 delta long in a position.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the puts would lead you to believe, that's why these put call ratios are a little bit weird. The put trading there would lead you to believe that we're bearish. Well, we're not. We just put $20 million in the market. We're anything but bearish, right?
Right.
So you have to be careful with the signals people are giving you. But now that trade, it probably should come up. If the put in the beginning was 4 to 450, I'm going to say we're going to trade it at 435, something like that, 440. We're not going to pay the full 450. We're sure as hell not going to get it at 4, right, because we're not the market maker.
Mm-hmm.
But we're probably going to get it halfway plus a little. They're going to give us a little something off the list price, shall we say. In addition, for us giving them their hedge, because we're giving them both sides of the trade,
right?
So it's nowhere near as much. It's nowhere near as bad as me walking out with Steph's order and saying, "I want to buy 2,000 of these puts." For God's sake, the open interest might be 300. What's the guy going to do with those puts?
Yeah, he can't lay off the risk.
No, he can't lay off the risk. So we're giving him both sides. So we should get a better price, correct?
You should,
and we do. You know, I mean, virtually all the time. But you have to be. You have to know what you're doing to do that. You can lose a lot of money. The last thing you want to do, as a matter of fact, get a little of this stuff. When I was young and I was on the marketing committee, they asked me to go. CBOE decided to do some marketing where they were going to send a member and somebody from the marketing team to go to these various firms and buy pizzas and so forth. So we go to this place and where did we go? We went to Detroit. And I'm with this guy who really wasn't in the marketing department, and he really wasn't much of a speaker, and I had not spoken in front of people like ever before either. So this is a long time ago. This is 1983.
I was going to say, what year was this?
83, 82. So, but I had nothing to say. I was just supposed to answer questions as a market maker.
Right.
So we get to Dean Witter office, and it's in a shopping center in Detroit. And Dean Witter, for those who don't remember, wanted everything to look like Dean Witter was still around. So you walk in this place, and all of a sudden, you get this really heavy, dark wood paneling.
Oh, yeah, green.
Oh, yeah, it's disgusting. And all these old dudes are walking around in the three-piece suits with the suspenders and everything. I'm going, this is a shopping center. What are you doing?
That's what they did. They put them all in shopping centers. It was weird.
Well, then they looked like they were on Wall Street.
Yeah.
Once you got inside, which obviously you weren't. So there was all these pizzas and everything. So the guy comes, he gets up there, and we just had a market move. And the dude goes, The guy gets up there who's supposed to be our leader, my leader, and he walks off and he says, these guys look like they're pissed off. I can't deal with them. You deal with them.
Ooh.
So I get up in front, and to be honest with you, Maddie, I mean, you know, I'm not used to having a problem talking. If one guy raises his hand, he goes, you guys are a bunch of crooks, meaning the market makers. And I'll be honest with you. If he didn't raise his hand and answer that question, I'd still be standing there. Because I had nothing to say. I had nothing to say. But once he accused me of that, and I got into the questions, well, it's a subject I knew something about. And the guy says, you guys are a bunch of crooks. Why? Well, Your markets are never any good, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know, don't tell me, let me guess. You do a lot of covered rights. Well, yeah. I said, and you put stock order in first. It takes you, I'm going to say, 5 to 10 minutes by the time you give it to your, this is back, you know,
right,
where you need a teletype and everything. You give it to somebody here, he calls New York, they call the floor, it goes in a teletype thing, somebody walks out to the crowd and comes back. Well, yeah, I suppose that's the way it works. I said, so you put the stock order in first, then you put the call order in, and by the time it gets there, once in a while you get it better, but you're not going to tell me about that. A lot of times you get it worse. It's because the market moved,
yep,
and your fill's not so good. Well, yeah. I said, why don't you just put them both in together? What do you mean? I can't do that. Well, that's your firm's problem, not mine. So then all of a sudden they're calling their back office guy out there. Hey, can we do this together? The guy goes, well, yeah. Well, why the hell did you tell us, you idiot? You
know, so, right. We've been losing how much money over the last, yeah, remember?
So, I mean, it's all about, but I honestly, if a guy wouldn't even raise his hand and call me a crook, I'd still be standing there. I had nothing to say.
Gosh, what a life-changing moment.
Yeah, I'd still be standing in some shopping center. It's probably down. I'd be dust on the ground, on the floor of the place. But you ever been to a speech like when you got there and you didn't have anything to say, or was like you had the wrong topic or something for the wrong people?
I have not specifically been there in that situation, but I have been in a place many times, even on the show every once in a while, where there's a topic brought up that I know nothing about.
Where can that ever happen? Certainly never on this show.
No, never. So, you know, trust me, I'm very aware of the situation.
Well, if you were strictly in cash,
uh-huh,
I'm going to say that I would one man's opinion, I would have zero problem in putting your money to work today in some kind of a protective program. If you're down 15-20% in various stocks and you've got 25 stocks in your portfolio, by the time you fix all that or get it together, you really hope that the market gives you a couple days of a breather to do that. That's a lot of effort, Steph. I mean,
this is just like when you get a really bad hair dye job, right? It takes you twice as long to get it fixed as if you just got it done right the first time. You know, it's just the same general idea.
I'm going to have to start dyeing my hair gray. Well, wait a minute. I already did that. S&P futures up 15, Dow's up 125. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamashi, Stephanie Coney, Matt Weber on the board. Coming back down a little bit, S&P futures are only up 10. Dow's only up 66, NASDAQ's only up 31. That was up, we were up a lot earlier. One of the reasons for that is Home Depot was up 650, now it's only up 220, so that's 30 points in the Dow right there off the top. But, no, we've come back some, we're still up, but again, yesterday we were down a bleep load basically, so we have not come back anywhere near like we're gonna cover that today. DAX up 93.8%, that was up over 100 a while ago. FTSE barely up now, only up 6, call that flat. Tech around up 23.5%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 4.59, that's 2%. 21,810, under 22,000. Shanghai up 24.9%. Hang Seng up 159.6%. So we've got some movement there. But this is the interesting market here today. Oil down $1.15, 58.78, ouch. Brent down $1.18, 68.94. His spread is $10.16. Natural gas up another 25 cents now. Steph, we talked 21, 25, 405.
Well,
our Bob down 3 cents. Get a little of this. Home heating oil down 1 cent. So, the guys in the Northeast, this is their year. They're gonna have they'll be able to heat their house better than the people that we know, maybe like us. Gold down 240, silver up a penny, copper up 3 cents. Still 270 copper mired in the doldrums down here. Every one of these, if you look at charts, Steph,
mm-hmm.
I mean, again, this is in relation to the dollar, and I don't want to get into this, but the oil, gold, silver, everything is down something like 15-20% copper in the last year as the dollar just keeps running up. Now, if you are long gold in Japanese yen, you might actually be up, but not so with the dollar. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're having some issues accumulate here on the area expressways. On the Edens inbound just before Montrose Avenue, we have a crash blocking the left lane. And that's affecting the Edens, as you can imagine. And then on the Kennedy side, right after the split, on the inbound side just before Central Avenue, there's an accident blocking the left lane as well. So all kinds of issues affecting the Kennedy and Edens because of those crashes. And now your travel time from O'Hare into downtown is well over an hour. So keep that in mind. One other issue, Jane Addams Tollway, which is just further into the suburbs there on I-90. We have a crash blocking the three right lanes right before Higgins Road. So that's stop-and-go traffic on the Jane Addams I-90 inbound just before Higgins. So all kinds of issues coming in on 90 and 94, so keep that in mind. Traffic building on the Eisenhower, but no accidents or issues to report. Same could be said for the Stevenson. Southside Expressways, Dan Ryan, I-57, the Bishop Ford look good. We had an earlier crash on I-80 just before I-57. That's clear, but we have a new crash on I-80 now, westbound before Pulaski. That's blocking the left lane in the south suburbs. Out west, Butterfield Road at Tower Place, there's a crash out in the western burbs. And then Route 53 at North Avenue, there is an accident as well. northwest suburbs. We have a crash US 12 southbound at Long Grove Road. So all kinds of issues out there as folks get back to work after some had a long weekend from Veterans Day yesterday, and that's affecting the roadways, as you can imagine. Weather today, partly cloudy skies, a high of just 30. That's 20 degrees below normal, just how we like it. Wind chills in the single digits. Right now it is overcast and 21, going up to a balmy high of 30. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68. Right now it's clear and 50. In sports, Bulls lost at home to the Mavericks 103-98. Lauri Markkanen will continue to rest that sore elbow. He's out 2 to 4 more weeks, as the team announced yesterday. Suns were blown out by the Thunder 118-101. In hockey, Blackhawks have dropped 8 straight. They lost in overtime in Carolina 3-2. In Monday Night Football, it was Eli Manning and the Giants outlasting San Francisco 27-23.
Chief. I'm thinking that if I'm going to be around for the Hawks and the Bulls to win another championship, I better go find a fountain of youth somewhere.
Yeah, the Hawks at least have the infrastructure to turn it around, but the Bulls, I like some of their young pieces, but they're nowhere near contending for anything like that.
Now, what, John, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing fine, but I have to quiz Manny Weber here. I can't let that one drop. Why do you say they have the infrastructure?
Because they have the same executive management that built a team that won 3 titles.
Same coach?
No, but I don't think coaches matter as much as the executives.
Ah.
The guys that actually build the team, I think, are much more important. And so, you know, I think they have the talent evaluation capabilities of turning this around, as they did, you know, 8-10 years ago when they were bad and then successfully drafted a bunch of great young players and cultivated that atmosphere and turned it into a consistent winner for 10 years. Can you do that again? Yes. Is it hard? Yes. Not a guarantee by any means. Whereas the Bulls, with Paxson and Gar Foreman and these guys, they've had zero history of success. They accidentally fell into the Derrick Rose pick when they had like a 1% chance of getting it,
yeah.
And they had a brief couple of years before he started getting hurt. Other than that, they've been bad every year.
Well, every one of these sports has its own nuances, and I go back to when they were drafting the guys that obviously are getting old now. The place was half full, and basically nobody gave a rat's behind, and you could pull that off. But now
they've sold out every game since.
Yeah, well, now, but now you have, I mean, at $400 a ticket, how long are you gonna hang? I mean, what is it?
That's a good question. Maybe if they're bad like this, maybe 1 or 2 more years. The Bulls, after the Jordan years, still sold out every game for like 10 more years.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then they're finally not selling out. They still have great crowds, though. In fact, I think they led the NBA in attendance as recently as either last year or 2 years ago.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a massive downtown area where people need somewhere to go to drink, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a fair statement.
It's part of it.
I mean, we're not even though we have a wonderful female with us this morning, we're not gonna say how much easier it is to tell the wife I'm going to the Bulls game with people from work than it is to say I got 4 other guys who went out to Gibson's and get slashed.
I'm not arguing the point.
Yeah.
I'm just chuckling over the candor.
Yeah, but it's like on the South Side, you knew early enough to say I joined a bowling league on Tuesday night rather than every single Tuesday saying I'm going out after dinner to get drunk with my buddies, which is easier.
That's exactly right.
It's the same thing, right? Just happened to be bowling. And who knows if you really even went bowling. Who cares? But
that's a good idea, Chief. The hockey team's so bad here and the tickets are so cheap, so giving everybody a pretty good little idea in their head out here.
Well, the thing that's got me is I don't know. We got to get an expert in here, an accent expert. I know from watching Notre Dame's hockey team, you know, more so the last few years because they've been pretty good. Everybody in college has been drafted. So
before they get out of college?
Oh yeah, it's a whole different. Like Steph, we're used to when the NFL draft, you draft a guy in what is it, May, April, somewhere in there.
Yep.
After the combines, after everything, you draft a guy. You expect him to show up in 3 weeks for rookie camp, and he's playing for you. Now in hockey, you draft a guy, could be out of junior, could be out of high school. He's going to go play 4 years for Boston College, for Notre Dame, for Michigan State, and he's a property of the Blackhawks. But you can't just, even if you have a bunch of draft picks, they're not on the ice for you next year. I mean, it's a whole different, I've not seen where all the stories written about the Hawks. I have yet to read an article where they list, here's 15 guys that the Blackhawks own, and they're playing for this and this college.
Draft is the first time in a long time that they're going to have high picks again.
But I'm saying
they've been great. They've been, you know, even 2 years ago when they lost in the first round, they were number one in the West, so they had a really low draft pick again. Last year was the first year they were actually bad and will have a high draft pick.
But what my point is if you draft the young Bobby Hull, he might be going to go play for Denver for 4 years. You're not even going to see the guy. It's the delay between the draft and him showing up. It's not like Rokon Smith.
Right. The NFL and the NBA are unique in that, you know, your draft picks will affect your team basically right away.
Yeah.
Baseball and hockey are not like that. Never have been.
So, right. I mean, wouldn't you think that by now that somewhere along, and I might have missed it, that somebody who knows hockey would say, here's the 40 draft picks that the Hawks have amassed, good, bad, or otherwise, and the colleges they're playing for, and if they're any good.
I could pull that right now. I mean, every organization, their minor league talent is all ranked, and each player is rated. I could pull up and see where the Blackhawks are ranked. I'll do that.
Because
it's just like baseball. You can always see whose farm system is ranked in what order, and then the individual prospects as well.
Well, the one kid on the Bruins,
where they're in that farm system, even in the hockey, they have some.
Well, didn't
the multiple levels too?
Jan, who's the kid on the Bruins that played his last game for BC in the NCAA tournament? And the next night, he started on one of the lines for Boston last spring. And like right near the plate.
I remember what you're talking about. Yeah. That's the kind of the thing that's few and far between, though. You know what I'm saying?
But I think he was drafted, I'm going to say, 4 years ago.
You mean 4 years prior?
Yeah. Yeah. And he actually had his Boston College career. And then right away. But the kid was good enough to be, you know, not in the first line, but the third line. I forget what his name is, but he's a good ball player. There are those guys at Toronto, all drafted, man. They came out of junior hockey, though. They didn't come out of college, did they? The guys that are like the big stars in Toronto?
I have no idea. I couldn't name a single player that's ever played for Toronto in the history of the organization.
Well, I happen to know it's because the one guy, he came in when he scored like 3 goals his first game or something. It was like 2 years ago. We talked about it. Some guy, he was an absolute star right out of the gate. But anyway, hockey's, it's tough to build a team. And I think it's tough to build a team when you've got a gate like the Hawks do. Hey, $400 and you just got to trade 2 of our best players because of a salary cap? Where's my ticket cap?
Oh, I don't know, but my favorite guy is the guy that came out who's the accountant who played in a goal for one day. He's my favorite.
What Chief's talking about, though, that's really difficult is exactly what the Cubs were able to do with really high ticket prices, still able to rebuild in it took them 3.5 years, which is a long time, and they lost some season ticket holders, Chief being one of them.
Me being one of them.
But they obviously made up for that right away and have now been, you know, a sellout high ticket prices franchise for 4 straight years.
It may not look like it, Matty, but I actually been doing a little cleaning in here, and I dug up, I found about 20 tickets that I didn't use from 5 years ago. Do you think they're still good?
You can turn them in.
Turn them in and get them back.
Turn them in for recycling.
Yeah, you could recycle them and feel good.
Steph, when the Cubs were lousy and had the season ticket, and John, I called down to the board of trade floor and I said, hey, you got, you know, because they all got off at, you know, 115 if you trade the corn and everything. So I said to the guy, I got tickets for the Cubs up here. Everybody wants them. You can go. I don't need any money. I just rather have them be used. The guy goes, yeah, send them down. I go, somebody want to use them? Well, not exactly. We've got a huge pile of them in the middle of the pit that nobody wants. We'll add them to the pile.
Oh, jeez.
So, Jan, I got to ask you, bud, what do you make of yesterday? If you had cash, are you a buyer here? And what do you tell somebody who walks in today and says, I got 5,000 shares of Goldman Sachs? What do you think?
Well, you know, as far as yesterday, you know, off a big clip, we're not back much today. I mean, yesterday's not surprising. I already heard, you know, on the news, listen to the news a little bit this morning that they're going to talk about some of these trade situations. So is that, is our government, and here's the conspiracy theory in me, are they going to come out and, you know, prop this up with a few golden news spots or something like that? Who the heck knows? But to answer your question, I think I would be involved in some of these broad-based indexes. I still think I would be involved in some of the metals, maybe the banking, Tom, maybe even the biotech, a few things like that. But I'd be very judicious in how I picked it, short end of the yield curve. You know, I would do some of that with some of the ETFs, things like that.
I mentioned the stuff earlier. The hardest thing is when you see one of these stocks, it's kind of a news stock, like Goldman is, and it's getting beaten up. It's really hard to figure out whether a stock is dropping because of news, whether the news is all out, not all out. It's a buy here. I mean, is there another shoe going to drop tomorrow? It's just a position that, well, I tell you what, I hate to be in, John, when somebody asks me that. I don't know.
Well, that's exactly it. And even with some of these positions, you know, since we're starting to have these problematic days, if I want to get, let's say, a position of 1,000 shares in X, Y, or Z, I'm buying them multiple times these days because there's no picking the direction. So I'm, legging into almost everything these days.
Well, but it's really hard. I mean, if you buy a stock at 50 and it's trading 40, to say you really should buy the 40 or 35 puts, it would be a lot easier if you had the 50 puts to start out and you roll them down to the 40s. That's easy to do. But to sell somebody, boy, your stock was 100, now it's 50, we better worry about it going to 10. I don't know. That's tough. I mean, because I'm going to say you got a 99% chance of it not going to 10, but I don't want the 1% chance on my conscience either.
Right. Well, exactly. And that's why we use the indices versus the individual stocks. And number two, that's why we try to hedge the things that we get involved in.
I'm going to throw you a tough one, Jen. You got some huge clients. Say you got a client like Steph walks in. She's like, who's the lady that invented Spanx? It's the richest lady in the world. Steph's got almost as much money as her.
I don't remember her.
I don't know her name, but she's
pretty. Your lips to Gansy.
She's pretty quiet under the radar for somebody that much dough. I mean, anyway, congratulations that she did so well with that. But
her whole product is based on being quiet and under the radar.
Under something, yeah. So, nice one, Maddie. But so somebody walks in and says, "I own all his GE. Do you think I need to buy the 8 puts?" What do you tell them, John? I have no idea what I tell them.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost to a level that, as far as doing any type of hedging, Tom, the only way to do it with that one would be in, spread format, because one thing at these levels is it's pennies one way or the other, and I'm not even sure you get the, I'd have to look at the options, determine all that, but I'm not even sure you could, do the spreads on it at this point in time. But if you could, I would definitely lean that way to answer your question.
Or what if you get, here's the death knell comment, Steph. I asked you if I should buy the 10 puts. You said no. Now it's 8. What do you think of the 8 puts?
Right.
I like the 10.
Yeah, I like the 10s better. There would be the phone call from hell, wouldn't it? I mean, good Lord. But how do you tell? I can't imagine him going out of business. But good Lord, every day there's people just dumping. It's got to be hedge funds. It's got to be retirement accounts. Steph, they got to be in the stock at 35 and said, "I can't take it anymore. Just get out of it at 8. And one of these days, I think you're going to have to be long in here. But when?
I mean, it gets to be a point where there's no point in getting out because the amount of money you have in it at that point is just so minimal. So,
but that's not the way they think.
I know that's not the way they think. But
it's like poker when you're pot committed.
Yeah,
it is.
At this point, I've already put in 18. I think I can throw in my last 2.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I remember
your rent money sitting there on GE right now.
Well, the story that Jack Backer Jay tells that one of his DPM stacks was what the hell's the name of it? Was Micron, I think. And the stack's going down, and one of the biggest holders of Micron, how it got to be that way, I don't know. You ever heard of the name Simplot?
No, guys?
I'll bet you have. I'll bet you have. He's a massive, massive potato farmer, and I think at one point.
Oh, he's a person. Okay.
He provided at one point something like 90% of all the frozen French fries at McDonald's.
Then I do know that guy.
Yeah. But somehow or another, the dude. This is 25 years ago, and John was still at his DPM. Somehow or another, the guy had a massive stake in Micron. Now, whether he was a original investor or he's part of the IPO, God only knows. So the thing's going down. Of course, the guy borrowed against it, probably for more land. And now the thing, he's getting margin calls basically out to behind. And, so he goes to, I don't know if it was Morgan or Goldman, one of the guys that are always the geniuses. He wants to sell his entire poke. And his stock's trading $7. Well, I think they made him a market, will take you out totally at $6.50. And the guy goes,
poor
okay.
Guy.
Yeah, the guy goes, okay. They puke him out at $6.50. They immediately come out with press release saying the stock was a buy.
Yep.
And it closed the day at $7.75 or $8.
Oh.
And it never looked back. You know, it was 2 weeks later, it was $10 or something. And, so it's, you can't let yourself in that sort of position, but I gotta believe that at some point GE had to be, after, the dear departed AT&T and Lucent, he had to be one of the most widely held stocks in the country. Still probably is.
For sure.
Right.
By the way, Chief, while we have John on the line, we've gotten a few tweets, from folks dying to hear his thoughts on the Arizona race.
Yeah.
That it looks like has been decided, but now the president's claiming
fake news,
election fraud, and all kinds of stuff. What's the word on the street there, John?
Well, as of this morning, Democrat Sinema has won. McSally, who was a Republican, has conceded the election this morning. They were going through all kinds of talk with how they're going to count these ballots. The only thing we didn't get was Chad, because we don't do it like that here. But, it's been going back and forth as far as, the criteria for counting these mail-ins. Mail-ins are a huge thing here. So just the average Joe mails in his ballot. So, they were having to go through those. But as of this morning, it's decided from that end. Now, I'm sure there's going to be more controversy as the day goes on, but the Republican has, conceded to the Democrat at this point. So we'll see, as far as if the Republican Party is going to, challenge us in some way, or even all the way up the line. I'm sure you'll get more tweets from Trump and things like that, but that's where it stands.
Well,
this morning.
PGA Saluki tweets us, How is it possible a Republican governor in Arizona gets 250,000 more votes than the Republican senator candidate?
That's a good point.
Is that true? I don't even know if that's true.
Yeah, he won pretty commandingly, but he's pretty well liked governor, and he's basically run the state pretty well, from that end. So that's probably the answer to that.
People feel more connected.
Kind of work with both parties, even though he's a Republican governor.
So you mean people in Arizona can actually vote on the person and their character and their job abilities, as opposed to just down the party line? That's amazing.
Matt, don't get too excited just for that position. this senatorial race was as ugly as they come, as far as all the attack ads, and it's the worst I've ever seen. So much so that I was taping everything I was watching on TV just so I could fast forward it.
Steph,
every 5 seconds.
Steph, cover your ears. Does the term catfight come to mind?
It does, but
yep.
What? I've seen a lot of, even in our own elections here, catfight, you could use that for two guys.
Oh, God, yeah.
Up there.
Man.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
Do you believe how dirty this Indiana one was?
Oh, that was horrible, too, and we got a lot of their ads also.
Yeah, we got a lot of their ads.
The Rauner and Pritzker stuff, even though Rauner just got absolutely smoked, and I'm thankful for that, strictly for the reason that we might get weed legalized. But
priorities.
Right, but man, the last Hail Marys that Rauner was throwing, I mean, they were dropping F-bombs and all that stuff in the commercials and just bleeping them out. I mean, it was crazy. I've never seen it get to this point.
Well, you've got a guy that won on the Democratic side, and the guy could be the next Solomon. I don't know, because he surely hasn't. There's zero program. The guy's had no program, John. I mean, nobody knows what he's going to do other than raise taxes. I mean, the two ladies were very, very close. But Jeff Flake he became somewhat, but McCain was very, very much in the middle, right? Pretty much, he was not. He was not far right. Right? I mean, the demographics
in Arizona,
are not just all dead right anymore, are they?
No. And, like you say,
you know, he was willing to, I mean, he was willing to, you know, work, you know, in the middle there. And, you know, that's why he's, you know, pretty well, you know, beloved, I mean, well liked in the country, to be honest with you, or hated for the right reasons, if you follow me.
I kind of like Jeff.
Would, you know, go somewhere in the middle.
What's Jeff like?
So, or either, you know, either of these two that way? I don't think so.
So you think Trump's happy he drove Jeff Flake out, now he's got a Democrat? That made
no
sense.
No, to answer your question, but, you know, strategies. Either of these two,
strategy is not Trump.
In my mouth, anyhow.
Yeah, strategy is not Trump's big thing.
No, I mean, could anything be any dumber than that? I mean, it's, you drive the Republican out and the Democrat wins. I mean, how could anybody be, what was so wrong with Jeff Flake? I thought he was a decent enough guy. Did you like him, Jen, or no?
Yeah, no, I mean, he was okay out here. I didn't see any, you know, I think he was, wasn't a McCain, but that's big shoes to fill. But,
yeah.
You know, I think he's willing to work the middle a little bit. These two are so divisive that regardless, you know, Sinema or this McSally, regardless of whoever was in there, I mean, it was, you know, there was no way to even, you know, begin to, you know, understand that and try to find the real issues with either one of them. So
they're not warm and fuzzy. Well, thanks, John. SP Futures not only up 9, Dow Futures up 48. We've come way down from this morning. NASDAQ Futures up 30. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't f***ing know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.